Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Talking Taker, episode number 6. But before we get started on the episode, we actually already recorded this episode a couple weeks ago, SummerSlam 1992. But there's some breaking news over the weekend. Unfortunately, learning about the passing of the legendary WWE Hall of Famer, Bobby the Brain Heenan. And to Travis and I, he's just one of our absolute all-time favorite wrestling performers. And he's really been actually a pretty important part of the first few episodes of this podcast. So we thought it'd be important to, or not important, but we just wanted to say a few words and share our memories and share our condolences before this episode started. So, I mean, Travis, like we've been talking about literally in every episode, I think, except the first one, because he's not on commentary for that first match. But every other episode, we've just had so many awesome things to say about Bobby the Brain Heenan. And what have you really seen and learned through going through these first few episodes?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's always been great in my book because, you know, as we mentioned in the first podcast, I watched some when I was little and then kind of fell away and then came back to it and in and out and then kind of really came back on strong in about 96, 97. I was a WCW guy at that point, so he was in WCW there, and he was great and hilarious then. But, you know, as years went by, I'd go back and watch WWF stuff. And then obviously with the network, we have more accessibility. And so he's just going back and watching some of these classic matches. He's just absolutely, literally had me laughing out loud and rolling on the ground, you know. It's been really eye-opening and ear-opening going back and doing these Talk and Taker matches. And just like you said, we've commented about his commentary in every single podcast we've done because we both of us make notes usually about the same thing, about these stupid little quotes he says or
right.
His dumb things or just the way he interacts in improv. You can tell he's just shooting from the hip, you know, and the way he improvs with Gorilla Monsoon and their chemistry and how good it is. And with him passing, it was just really, I don't know. I didn't know the guy, but it kind of hit me hard. And thank you, too. And it's just really sad to know that he's gone, especially because now we've kind of just kind of had a resurgence in our love for him, you know, these last few weeks. It's going to take on a different life now as we continue to do these matches and hear him. We're still going to reminisce and point out the hilarious things. But now, you know, he's gone, and it's just kind of hard to think about, weird to think about. But I want to mention one thing. He said, you know, WWE put a great thing on their website about, you know, just some classic one-liners he had and stuff. And one of them involves The Undertaker, and so I wanted to bring that one up. And he says, I don't know if this is in a match that we're going to review or not because it doesn't have the matches here. But it says, you know, The Undertaker's going to start a new basketball team. Yeah, it's for guys 6 feet and under. And, like, that's like a lame dad joke, but, like, it's so funny. I can just hear him delivering that line. You know, he's got the dramatic pause and he just says it. And, you know, the reaction from Gorilla or Vince, whoever it is he's saying it to. I'm sure it's hilarious. So
yeah.
I want to go find where that's from and we can listen to it. But that's just hilarious.
Yeah, I read that one online too. And I didn't remember that one, but that's a great joke, great one-liner.
Yeah.
You know,
one of my favorites. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I listened to this last night. I watched his documentary on the network and I remember this quote, but it just, you know, he has so many good things. You don't remember them all, you know. But then he's talking about Stu and Helen Hart. He says, you know, his name is Bruce, right? What a stupid name. You have 9 months, you come up with Bruce? Like, it's completely, like, it's just, it's not even getting, like, I don't know. That's just funny, man. Like, I don't even think he's supposed to say that, you know. There's definitely nobody feeding him that line through his headset. And I don't think that he's supposed to be healing on Bruce at that point, but like
he just did it.
Yeah, 9 months you come up with Bruce.
I love the one where he's talking like interviewed some guy in the crowd, and he says like, "How long you been married?" And the guy says, 20 years. He says, "You know, if you'd killed her on your wedding night, you'd be out by now." It's just like it's so savage and so.
You can't say that nowadays.
Oh God, sure. No.
And watching him. And he had his Bobby Heenan show, and he had the three large ladies on there. I mean,
yeah.
He just ripped them. It was just all fat shaming the whole time. I mean, nowadays, good Lord,
no,
Amy
you couldn't
Schumer
do that.
Would be all over him. Yeah, about that. You know, it's just, but he was so funny and so quick, and that's just, I don't know. You and I always loved improv, and we used to do that kind of stuff, you know, just for fun back in the day. And just hearing him, and now he's just so quick-witted, and everyone on that documentary. The documentary came out, I think, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, so, I remember buying the DVD when it first came out.
Yeah, yeah. I remember watching it with you. Great, but like, you know, even everyone there said, you know, he was so quick, and he could have been, mm-hmm. He had his own late night talk show, you know, that had nothing to do with wrestling. I really do believe that.
He was
so funny.
I do believe that too. I believe his sense of humor, his comedy, could stand next to a lot of comedic actors and that sort of stuff, and he could have been on par with a lot of them. I retweeted, I can't remember if it was on my account or the Talking Taker account, there's some interview with David Letterman where he talks about watching Bobby Heenan when he was a kid and how funny he was and what a great heel he was. I retweeted on my account on at Alex Dorio, there's this newspaper article, I think from Chicago, I don't remember exactly which city, but it's from the 70s when he was with Nick Bockwinkel and Ray Stevens.
Yeah.
And he's talked about this story in other interviews or something, but he was such a hated heel that literally a guy in the crowd tried to shoot him and sent guns and shot a gun like 5 times towards the ring and hit somebody. And there's this whole write up in the newspaper about it. I mean, that is being a heel right there. That's legendary status. You talk about improv. I really do. Like, I've thought this a long time before now, because obviously, you know, Bobby Heenan's been in real bad health for a long time. We've kind of known this was coming. A long time. It's still gonna be sad, but
it's been sad to see him in the last few years.
Yeah, it is, and I'm glad he's not suffering anymore. Yep. But you know, I've just thought about his legacy, and I really do think as a kid, as a 5, 6, 7 year old kid watching Bobby Heenan, he really molded my sense of humor in a lot of ways. He was like one of the first really, really funny people I saw, and he helped me learn that sort of style of improv comedy, of insult comedy in a lot of ways. And you and I, being in ministry together, and acting together, but really, we were in this ministry called Young Life, and also in our churches, we've gotten to do a lot of skits and games and play a lot of goofy characters and wear costumes. And I think about Bobby Heenan when I try to come up with characters, and I think about Roddy Piper and Jerry the King Lawler. Like, those are like three comedic characters that I try and am influenced by and think about how they performed when I'm trying to play a bad guy or something like that. It really had a real big impact on me and what I do in my career. So I just really appreciate his legacy and his contributions to wrestling and just to comedy and to life in general. Man, he's a legend. Everybody says he's one of the nicest guys in the business too. Just a great guy to be around and hang out with. And to tie it back to Talking Taker, watching back these matches, it really cements his reputation. Everybody calls him the greatest, but and when you go back and watch it, he lives up to the reputation. But he has done a huge service to the Undertaker in these matches. He has put him over in incredible ways. He has helped build the mystique and the legacy and the character of the Undertaker. It's not, you know, not to crap on the new guys and the new generation, but sometimes now the commentary, we've talked about before, it doesn't take it seriously. Or it tries to veer into, it tries to break kayfabe too much. And Bobby Heenan doesn't do that at all. And it really has helped build up this character.
Yeah, as hilarious and funny as he is, there's not a lot of quips. Like that one Undertaker comment I mentioned earlier, we haven't heard it yet, you know, as far as us going through these matches, you know. So I don't know if that comes later or if it's on a Raw or whatever. But he stays pretty serious, you know. He knows when to hit the spots, when to pick the comedy spots, when to be serious. And you're right, he has really solidified the Undertaker and his character and really put him over. Keeps talking about what's in the urn, you know, talking about Paul Bearer, there's a power of the urn. And I think after every match we keep commenting that he's like, no one's going to stop this guy.
Yes.
This guy's unbeatable. No one's going to stop him. How are you going to stop the Undertaker? So he really has, you know, to tie it all back to this podcast we're doing, he really has, you know, really helped build this Undertaker character, and I don't know if it'd be the same without him, you know, taking it seriously. So, thanks, Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, thanks, and you know, it's the combination with Gorilla Monsoon is one of the greatest of all time. Maybe the greatest. Definitely, I'd have to say my favorite of all time. That's not a controversial opinion, but it's what
our childhood. We grew up on, you know,
we
Jim
did.
Ross, and,
yeah,
and Jerry Lawler. You know, for our teenage years and stuff, and they'll always be classic. But even Jerry Lawler said on that DVD, he said, you know, people tell me, you know, me and JR are the best, and I say, no, we're not. It was Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, and I think he's right. You know?
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
And luckily for us, we do have, five more matches with Gorilla and Bobby on commentary, including today's episode with SummerSlam 92. So we've got Survivor Series 92, WrestleMania 9. SummerSlam 93, Survivor Series 93, where we still get to enjoy that commentary team. So we'll continue to praise them, and maybe we'll comment on it a little bit more as we get to that final match with Bobby on commentary. But I'm sure it'll be a big part of it. We'll continue to throw some clips in there of his commentary calls to make everybody else laugh and just to celebrate his legacy. But feel free to share with us your favorite Bobby Heenan memory or favorite comment about The Undertaker or something like that, or just any great Bobby Heenan memories that you've got on our Twitter page. But we're going to jump right into the rest of the episode right now. Welcome to the grandeur, welcome to the spectacle, welcome to the pageantry of Talking Taker. Had to try that out. This
Thanks,
man inspired me. Oh yeah, yeah. I love how he used to do that at the beginning of pay-per-views. He'd always do, welcome to this, welcome to that, welcome to the Survivor Series, or whatever.
Right, before they had pyro and stuff, and now they don't do anything.
Who needs pyro when you have Vince McMahon just...
Exactly. That should be his only job on screen nowadays. He should just do that for all network shows.
That gets me more excited than pyro does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely it does.
But for real, welcome back to Talking Taker, our exploration, digging up the career of the dead man, The Undertaker, match by pay-per-view match. My name is Alex Dorio, joined alongside my tag team partner, the urn bearer himself, Travis White. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great. My brother actually was named after Paul Bearer, so not true. My brother's name is Paul, though.
Who is he? Who does he share a name with?
The Big Show. Yes, he does. My brother and the Big Show have the same name, so it's awesome. That was always cool in middle school. I could tell people that. So
yeah. Did anyone ever mistake him for the Big Show?
I did, because I was much smaller than him. So. And he chokeslammed me a lot.
But didn't people call your house looking for Paul White?
Somebody did one time, yeah. Yo, this is the Big Show? No, this is not the Big Show. I completely forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone called.
That's what I was trying to lead you into.
And, like, I was in middle school or high school and called looking for the Big Show. Yo, this is the Big Show? No. It is Paul White, though.
I'm surprised your brother didn't roll with that, though.
I'm sure if he'd have been there, he would have. I think I was on the phone.
Oh, you answered it. Okay.
Yeah, I believe I answered the phone. So. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, he definitely would have gone with it.
Yeah. The clean-shaven Big Show, of course.
The big naked baby.
Well, we're recording this a few weeks before here. We're backlogging some episodes because we won't be able to record in the next couple weeks, but Travis has on his Georgia Bulldogs shirt. I got on my Clemson Tigers shirt, and this is Clemson just won their first game of the season. Georgia, let's cross our fingers for them going up against App State later tonight. I don't want to jinx it, so I won't say anything positive or negative. Maybe I can edit it in later that they
we'll
definitely won.
Yeah. Go Dogs.
There you go. We are recording this in between games and getting ready for all that and ready. You know, you can tell I'm just trying to avoid talking about what we actually have to talk about here today. It's our next pay-per-view match of The Undertaker We finished WrestleMania 8, and we cruised through the summer. Man, it was nice when you only had 4 pay-per-views a year to cover instead of 1 every 3 weeks. But make it all the way to August for the SummerSlam you thought you'd never see, as Vince McMahon calls it on this show, SummerSlam 1992 from Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, August 29th, 1992. I think it aired 2 days later, though.
Yeah.
What I read online.
Tape delay.
I obviously wasn't going to air live because it had been like, whatever, 3 in the morning here or something. But I wish they would do this now.
Oh, yeah, they could totally do it now.
There's no reason with a network they can't do a WrestleMania, well, maybe not Mania, but a SummerSlam in England again. There's no reason. You can do it just like Beast from the East and have people wake up early, or everything's on demand anyway, so what's the problem if they don't watch it, you know, right when it airs? And this was such a spectacle. I wrote that down. It's one of my notes. It's just over 80,000 people there, man. It was awesome. So many people there. Such a spectacle to see. Again, another precursor to some of the WrestleManias we see nowadays. So
yeah. So what? London is like 5 hours they're ahead of us.
Probably
right?
five hours. Yeah, from Eastern time.
Yeah. So why not? They could have a pay per view at 8 o'clock London time. It just starts at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on WWE Network, like in the U.S. Like, that would be fine. Like you said,
yeah.
I mean, I think they could still do it for WrestleMania. I think people are going to watch WrestleMania no matter what, whether it's afternoon or night.
Starts at like 2 anyway.
Exactly.
Free show.
But definitely for SummerSlam, much less one of these other B shows or C shows. Like, I can't believe we haven't done that yet in the past 3 years of WWE Network. And I was thinking, man, it'd be cool to do this for like the 25th anniversary, but that would have been a couple months ago. They should have done this again, but maybe for the 30th anniversary or something, because it was incredible to look at. Like, a lot of the past few WrestleManias of the past 10 years or so are just amazing spectacles, and I think the Wembley Stadium look, it rivals that, even without the massive stages and everything. It just looks amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. And those UK fans are nuts, and they were nuts even back then too. So, you know how rowdy they get nowadays for NXT and the, you know, the shows, the two tours they do over there after WrestleMania and after, well, in November I think they go back. So this would be great nowadays to put it on.
Oh yeah, they were rowdy and wild, and I just skimmed through a little bit of the show, like I try to do, just skimming through some of the other events on the show before we get to the match, and landed on Natural Disasters versus the Beverly Brothers. And
Bo and who was the other one?
Bo and Blake.
Blake, yeah.
I've been watching wrestling for 20 some years. I still don't know which one is Bo and which one is Blake.
Nope.
And I never will. But they were insanely loud for the Natural Disasters, man. They loved, I think they were the loudest pop I heard the whole show, dude.
That's
great. Loved them. Just like earthquake, man. But that's just saying the crowd was electric for everything, even that match they were crazy for. So that was cool.
And this match, this Undertaker match, is I wrote down it's in the come down match, you know, the breather match in between, because the match right prior to this was Randy Savage and Ultimate Warrior, right?
WWF championship match, yep.
Yeah, and that was it ended in some shenanigans, you know, with Flair and I think Mr. Perfect, right?
Right.
Out there as well. But, you know, chair shot to the leg and all this stuff, and the crowd was real. But that was a big, big match.
Mm-hmm.
And then the main event, of course, is one of the greatest Intercontinental matches of all time.
Yeah.
Bret Hart and British Bulldog. And that place just went berserk for that match. But, so this match, this Undertaker Kamala match, is on the cool down spot. This is the go to the bathroom, or, you know, let's get some energy back and go get some popcorn or whatever. Well, unfortunately, but, Undertaker's gone from beating Jake the Snake at WrestleMania to 6 months later, he's wrestling Kamala. He's basically feuding with Harvey Whippleman.
Yeah.
Former women's champion.
Of course, Harvey Whippleman. Legendary.
Well, at this point, he wasn't a woman, but
future women's champion.
Yeah, future women's champion at this point. So he feuds, again, we apologize for the next few episodes of this. We got some Kamala matches, some Giant Gonzalez matches. But it is what it is. We're not going to stop just because that's the way the story's told. So.
And it's a very, you know, it's a pivotal moment, really, for The Undertaker's career, because like you say, he's dispatched of Jake the Snake Roberts and gone from feuding with him and Hulk Hogan and that sort of stuff. And now he's essentially, you could argue, without Hulk Hogan here for the next little while, and Hulk Hogan comes back for a couple months, but essentially Hulk Hogan's basically gone from the company. Undertaker is arguably the biggest star in the company. I mean, Bret Hart's the WWF champion, but I mean, you could debate which one of those guys was more over at this point.
Yeah, but yeah. Shortly after this, because Savage is gone, Warrior's gone.
Yeah, you got Savage.
Hogan's gone. I mean, shortly after this is when they all leave and the steroid trial and stuff. But yeah, you're right. Between Bret Hart and then because Shawn Michaels would have been a heel later on. I think he turned on Marty in December, or maybe December before this. I can't remember.
Yeah, he's already a heel.
So anyway, he's not a face. So yeah, between Bret Hart and Undertaker, I think you're right. He's the biggest name they got.
He's almost, well, I mean, he's not in the WWF title picture hardly ever, so he's almost already at that point where he doesn't need the title to be over. I mean, Bret Hart, I mean, I love Bret Hart. He's one of my favorite wrestlers, but he definitely needed the title to be over more than The Undertaker did. So now Undertaker has almost slipped into the Hogan role of just fighting the monster of the week, like the big giant monster.
Yeah.
And Undertaker ends up doing that for more or less the next 4 years or so. Like, this feud is the template for so many Undertaker feuds where he's up against a monster who's afraid of caskets and afraid of urns and stuff. And they just cycle this feud out so many times, but this is the first time we see that template for that thing against Kamala, the Ugandan giant.
Yes, yes, very true. And yeah, Harvey Whippleman's out. Dr.
Harvey Whippleman,
if you will. And he's got, he introduces them, accompanied by Kimchi.
From the dark continent of Africa to the bright lights of the World Wrestling Federation. The bright lights of Wembley Stadium and the bright spotlight of SummerSlam. I want everybody to show proper respect for the Lord of the Jungle, the Ugandan giant, the mighty Kamala.
Certainly a scary sight here in Wembley Stadium. And you know, like he says, he's going to put the Undertaker in a pot and cook him.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't say that on television, kids.
Shouldn't have said it back then.
Nope. Shouldn't have said it back then. But the Ugandan giant, Kamala. So, Kimchi. You remember who Kimchi was? Who played him?
I think it was old Steve Lombardi.
Yeah, Brooklyn Brawler.
Yeah.
A company man who, unfortunately, was fired last year.
For
Lord knows why. So, did everything the company asked of him. But anyway, but yeah, how comes the Ugandan giant, Kamala?
What's your opinions on Kamala?
I will tell you this. He is as into his character as The Undertaker is. I noted that. You know, he's a little hokey. This is the time of, you know, WWF. Shortly after this, we're going to get Duke the Dumpster and Doink the Clown and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
So we're already kind of headed toward the cartoons. Undertaker may have been supposed to have been a cartoon, but he's not. Kamala is into it, man. I noted that. You know, he plays it well. He's got his little trainer. He's got Kimchi leading him down there. I mean, he puts it over himself. You know, and by him being into it, the crowd takes it seriously. It's not like when Lord Tensai came out and the crowd just kept chanting Albert and A-Train at him. You know. You know, talking about, like,
yes,
so this is, you know, Kamala's out there and it's believable, you know, slapping his belly and has his little paint on and everything, and he plays it well, you know.
That's a great comparison. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's I think that's a perfect comparison of the opposite of Kamala, because, you know, he'd been Kamala for years and years. He started in Memphis and Mid-South and all that stuff. I watched this thing on YouTube today. I spent a lot of today watching Kamala videos on YouTube, just promos, and just went down the Kamala rabbit hole. So
yeah. That's
how my life is going right now when my wife is out of town.
Yeah.
I swear I'm married, people. But
As am I, and mine's out of town as well. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Likely story. Both of our wives are out of town.
They just happen to be out of town. Anyway, there's this video of his first promos in Memphis, and I've heard Jerry Lawler talk about his ideas for Kamala getting inspired from National Geographic magazines and all this sort of stuff before, but it's worth watching Kamala's debut promos in Memphis. He's just out in the woods with his face paint, and the announcers are like,
Kamala, 6'9" tall. Kamala, 385 pounds. Kamala, the coolest man known to professional wrestling today. Arms and legs as large as trees. As strong as some of the largest animals known to man. Kamala, 6'9". Kamala, 385 pounds. Kamala, the Ugandan giant.
This ridiculous nature video thing.
Look, I think that was filmed at Jerry Jarrett's place in Hendersonville.
I think he says that.
I've heard Jerry Lawler say that. So,
yeah.
Which I lived near there for 5 years. It's kind of funny. That's where they filmed at Jerry Jarrett's place. So, you know.
Yeah, you know. what I'm trying to say, I guess, in a long-winded way, is that professional wrestling has never been, you know, the most culturally sensitive thing in business in the world. You've got just this guy who's supposed to be this African savage with face paint. He eats. He's a cannibal. He doesn't speak. He just moans and cries and whines and doesn't know how to wrestle. He doesn't understand humanity and human beings. And, you know, it's 1992. You know, obviously, right. This wouldn't flow in 2017. It probably shouldn't have flowed in 1992, but wrestling is usually at least 5 or 10 years behind, you know, the culture. You know, we still have the WWE champion now is still just like the foreign heel who hates America. And, you know, it's not quite like Iron Sheik levels bad, but it's still, you know, the same. Still fighting the same battles. If you're not American, you hate America, and we're supposed to hate you because you're not American. And Kamala is a different beast than that. No pun intended for him being a beast or anything like that. But like you said, it's a weird thing. It's just part of wrestling. Not making excuses for it. It is what it is.
Yep,
and for what it's worth. If you're going to play an African savage, he does a pretty outstanding job of committing to it and being all in on his character. And at least we can say that about him because he sure as heck can't wrestle.
Nope. This match is, like I said, 3 minutes and 27 seconds, so he didn't have to wrestle very long, which is a good thing. But this is one of another notable thing about this match is as soon as the gong goes off for Undertaker, I mean, that crowd erupts.
Oh, yeah.
I think all 80,000 people probably on their feet, you know. And this is the beginning of Undertaker's really cool walks to the ring, really cool entrances, you know. He comes out here.
Not quite a walk.
Not quite a walk, yeah, at that point. Yeah, right. Paul Bearer, poor guy, he has to walk in front of the hearse.
It's your ride.
Holding the urn, yeah. The old fat guy with too much makeup on has to walk in front, but then Undertaker comes out in a hearse. He's hanging out of the back of a hearse. Really cool sight. I wrote just, what a spectacle, you know?
Absolutely.
Again, really cool sight to see.
He's had a lot of great entrances that we'll get to, but this is right up there with the best of
them. Oh, yeah.
It's awesome. I'm surprised they never redid it
or reused it. I was very surprised.
It was really
and
cool.
And Bobby Heenan, again, classic. He goes, look at that idiot. The steering wheel's on the wrong side. The guy driving. Oh, he's so good. So good.
Yeah, that was great. But go ahead.
Heenan and Vince McMahon are both putting Kamala and Taker over as scary and giants and not savages, but you know, not human, not normal. So they did a good job with that, you know. If this is the first time you ever saw them, you know, you'd really be terrified of both of them, even though Undertaker is a baby face at this point.
Oh yeah, I mean, so, we look at Kamala as kind of goofy a little bit now, but because I watched a promo of him with Harvey Whippleman, Kim G, and it's in the middle of the arena, and he's like intimidating Mean Gene, and he's got his spear and his mask, and there's a girl crying in the front row, like, and wow, she like yeah. turns to her mom, and she's terrified of Kamala. So, you know, he did his job, and he is a monster here. As insensitive as that is, I mean, that's the role he's playing, and he played yeah. it up. But I was going to say about the entrance, this is also kind of the start of the tradition of having to wait till it's dark to do the Undertaker's match, which we see a lot of the WrestleManias, not only because he's a big star, but, you know, it's not the Undertaker's entrance if it's not dark right. outside. So with these big outdoor right. shows, that's, you know, that's part of why he ends up going on second to last, too, is you got to get the darkness outside. So, interesting yeah, start true. To that.
I didn't think about that mm-hmm. for this match. Very cool.
Not a lot of scientific wrestling.
Nope. Couple throat chops. Kamala attacks from behind at first and knocks chops Undertaker over and over, and the crowd's going nuts for Taker coming back and chopping him, and he goes for old school pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
What we call old school, again, the arm ring and walk the top rope, does that, hits it.
Goes for it again, and yep. then Harvey Whippleman, straight in front of the referee, yep. shakes the ropes and gets Undertaker off. Should have been disqualification.
Yep. Should have been DQ right there, but Kamala pulls him down again. As we mentioned in the previous podcast, you can't go for that move twice in the same match.
No. Nope.
You can't. Go into the well one too many times. Kamala pulls him down. But then Undertaker goes outside. Don't forget how they got outside. But anyway, he attacks Kim Chi and Whippleman, both outside, and go back inside. And this is what we haven't seen this move yet until right now. The chokeslam.
Yes.
It is a huge chokeslam.
Yes.
Because Kamala is a Ugandan giant. He's big.
And the announcers are saying, I don't think he can get him up. And he gets him up.
Immediately
so.
He does. It was kind of like the other week when, never mind. I was going to talk about Monday Night Raw, but we're not going to talk about that. But anyway, I'm not sure if he can get him up. And, he gets him right up and chokeslams him. But it was really cool because, again, we've mentioned in the previous podcast where lots of choking, lots of throat thrusts and stuff like that, but no chokeslam yet. Well, here it is, you know.
And this is probably he's probably added it in sometime over the summer, sure. but this is the first time we're seeing it in the pay-per-views. So,
right.
Because they were talking about it like he would do it, so... Yeah, this is the first time we've seen it, so that's a cool moment
exactly.
for this.
And then he hits a diving lariat after that, and again, the crowd is they never don't pop for that move, you know.
Yeah.
And I still do, even when
great.
He was at WrestleMania, you know, the last several doing it. It's awesome to see him do that.
Yeah.
So apparently, I mean, chokeslam wasn't his finisher at this point. It was an alternate finisher because he doesn't mm-hmm. try to cover him. You know, he just does it and then immediately does a diving lariat after that. So, but then he goes for his neck. I guess he's hitting his five moves of doom in a row. He goes for the chokeslam, lariat. Then he goes for tombstone. But then, what's his name? Kim Chi interferes.
He hits him with his hat.
Yeah. Takes off his safari hat and hits him with.
But apparently, it's a plastic hat. So I guess that's a little bit better than hitting him just with a
it's like a trucker
bucket
hat.
It's like a helmet, I guess.
Yeah, more of a helmet. But this calls for the DQ. I guess the ref has had enough at this point.
Yeah, we've all had enough at this point.
Yeah, so Undertaker's got a win here because of disqualification. And the match was very quick. And what transpires after the match is probably takes as much time
mm-hmm.
as the match actually does.
Mm-hmm. So Kamala, I kind of love this.
Me too.
I think someone needs to bring this back. He goes down for the for just a regular splash. Does he do it from the bottom rope, or does he just do it from the ground?
No, he just does it on the ground.
Okay.
He runs against the rope like Ultimate Warrior would have done.
Yeah.
He does that.
It's a big splash on the ground. And he goes up to the second rope. It's a splash, mm-hmm. same splash from the second rope. And then third time, goes all the way up to the top rope.
Yep,
it's
it does
a big splash.
It's so good. But if you notice, the crowd didn't have to chant one more time. One more time. He just did it. You know, it's part of what he's going to do. So, I thought it was really cool.
Someone
to see
needs
him
to
do
that. Again.
Yeah, someone should do that nowadays. I feel like Umaga would have done that back in the day.
Yeah, that would have worked.
Rest in peace. But someone should do that now. Someone big, like Bray Wyatt or something.
The Heavy Machinery guys. Should.
Oh, yeah, those guys. I can't even pronounce their names. Yeah. But they should do it.
I could see them doing that. That'd be stupid for them. Yeah. but stupid time, in a good way.
Yeah. Undertaker's laying on the ground the whole time, though. I mean, he's selling it. Oh, so yeah. It's not like he doesn't do the sit-up immediately between each one.
I think it's the longest we've seen him down and out from something.
So he's doing his part to put over Kamala and how destructive he can be, even though he got DQ'd, you know. And he sells it, but then he does the sit-up after the third, you know, splash and just stares Kamala down, who then begins just running up the aisle, like scared out of his mind. Again, he's playing that, you know, uncultured, you know, savage type. You know, he doesn't understand, you know, humanity. So he's just scared of this, you know, Undertaker. He just literally runs up the aisle. Basically stalks him, like Michael Myers would have.
Yeah.
Stalks him up the aisle.
Kamala has the greatest facial reaction I've ever seen in my life. Just, I just can't get over his look of fear and shock when he saw the Undertaker sit up. It is worth the price of admission. It was worth watching this terrible match just to see that facial reaction. It was amazing. And why Kamala, you know, look, it's, I don't know, man. Not a better wrestler than like a Jinder Mahal or something like that, not to keep picking on him, but way more personality and character than a lot of people nowadays. Him would be one example, but you could pick from quite a few guys on the current WWE roster that don't have the same personality and charisma as Kamala did. Now, obviously, you're going to get a much better match nowadays, but
For sure.
There's something to be said for that personality and charisma and commitment to character that we got back in these days. So it's a trade-off, I guess.
Yeah, and like I said, kudos to Kamala for staying in character the whole time and just really selling it. You know, he and Undertaker, this is two, you know, caricatures put up against each other. You know, it's not like the main event where it's Bulldog and Bret Hart. Right. You can see an athletic spectacle for half an hour. You know, this is two cartoons almost put up against, but they do it well, do a good job. So Undertaker's still living his gimmick up. Paul Bearer is doing an excellent job on the outside as always. You know, giving him power from the urn and all that stuff, and that's just great. I think Paul Bearer's eyebrows here like went in two different directions, though. If I remember, like, he clearly had them drawn on, but he had like an extra, like he looked like an owl almost. So that's great. So, but I wrote the Heenan again at the end. He writes, "Nothing can hurt this man." Or he says, "Nothing can hurt this man." So, even though he got three body splashes from the Ugandan Giant, he sat up and nothing can hurt him. So we. Again, we've only seen his one loss is that roll-up by Hulk Hogan, so we haven't seen him lose, you know, yet on pay-per-view. So.
Yep, and he's got to face a tough challenge next month. As you know, part of me wanted to just combine Kamala into one episode, but month is pretty special because it's the first of one of the Undertaker's signature matches, so I think that definitely deserves its own episode to just discuss
for sure.
The gimmick of the coffin match.
Right, yeah. I was saying casket match, and as I was drinking my notes, No. This was a coffin. I don't know what the difference is.
Oh, I will tell you what the difference is.
Okay.
There is a difference.
When we get there.
I'll tell you next week.
Yeah, you tell me when we cover Survivor Series 92 what the difference is.
That's right. So that's next week, but as far as this week goes, let us know what you thought. Let us know what you thought of this match. If we missed anything, or if you had a favorite moment or memory of Undertaker and Kamala.
Or if you were there. Sam Roberts.
Please.
Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. He was there. His first show ever was SummerSlam 92, which is awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Say that. So kudos to him. That's awesome. I'm jealous. So.
Do you think, is he one of the guys that was dressed up as Undertaker in the crowd?
I don't know.
There were a few cosplayers out there.
There were. Also, at Survivor Series, there are several, so a whole row of cosplayers there.
I want to talk about
them. These guys are ahead of their time.
Yeah. Hit us up on Twitter at Talking Taker, at Alex Dorio, and not at Travis White. But like I said, I always say, pass me a long message. I'll spread the word to Twitterless Travis over there. Let us know what you thought on iTunes. Give us a rating and subscribe. We've also got our episodes up on YouTube now, if that's your thing, and you want to, if that's how you ingest your podcasts. If that's the right word. We're putting them up on there. And so let us know what else we can do, or any other formats you want to see us, or need, or we need to be putting stuff out on. We're just a couple amateurs just having fun doing this. So if you've got any suggestions, we are open to hearing it and open to hearing your opinion and favorite Undertaker memories and all that good stuff. But until next time, I guess.
Go watch Survivor Series.
Yeah, go watch Survivor Series 1992 to follow along on this journey. That's it, man. All we got to do is now is. Yep. And rest in peace.